Okay, everyone, this is Stephen Garten here with another episode of the Charity Charge podcast. Today, sitting across from me in the studio is Catherine Engelhardt Kronk. She is the CEO of Mission Box and president of the Mission Box Philanthropic Fund. And before we give her the floor, I just want to acknowledge and thank her so much for being with us. Her experience and perspective on the nonprofit industry, quite frankly, as far as the presence that I've been anyone, it's completely unprecedented. I've learned so much from her, getting to know her a couple of years ago and then more recently reconnecting. So I'm super excited that she took the time to join us and share all of her past experience, learnings, and knowledge with everyone at the Charity Charge community. So thank you for being with us, Catherine.
Thank you for having me. It was a very nice introduction.
Well, as I was driving over here and just thinking about what I would say, it's truly is what it is. You know, I really feel that, you know, I interact with a lot of people in running Charity Charge. Some of them are only involved in nonprofits. I don't say only, but, you know, just know it as a casual like board member or volunteer or donor. But you really have so much experience both in running nonprofits, obviously being on the boards of nonprofits, and then more recently, as you've had your for-profit companies that are dedicated to serving nonprofits, you just bring such an interesting perspective.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure. So with that, you know, actually, one of the things we were just talking as we were about to hit record here was actually your long history in the nonprofit world. Do you mind just quickly kind of rattling off for sense of perspective of the organizations that you've been a part of chronologically and where you've worked up until today?
No. And I think the interesting part of that history is that I did make a jump. I made a leap from nonprofit to for-profit. And a lot of people ask me about how do you do that? So that history may be helpful and
absolutely
provide some insight. I started out as a social service provider right out of school. I worked with adult schizophrenics in a deinstitutionalization program in Minneapolis, and I did that for 6 years. I then ran chemical dependency treatment programs. They were non-residential, and I was trained for that. So I would open them and license them and hire everyone and then move on to the next. And then I moved to Austin, Texas, where we are today. And I was executive director of a child abuse prevention and treatment program. Saw about 25,000 kids a year. And after that, I worked in a grief and loss center. I was the executive director.
Which one was that?
It was called the Center for Attitudinal Healing. And it used Jerry Jampolsky's theories of managing grief and loss. Most of the families there had a very sick child. A few had lost a spouse, but most of the reason that they were there was that they had terminally ill children or had recently lost a child. And then I was recruited to start Any Baby Can, which is a fabulous organization that still exists. It's in San Antonio and Austin. They work with medically fragile and chronically ill children and provide everything from sibling care to healthcare access to parenting groups. So I started that, and then I was recruited away by the United Way here, which is now called with Greater Austin. They cover a geographic area larger than all New England, and my first job there was to start a 211 for the state of Texas, which I did. And then I moved on to be senior VP of funds allocations and outcome and impact. So I spent a lot of time training nonprofits and also overseeing the allocations. At that job, I had a big aha about how much time as a funder we were spending trying to help nonprofits report outcomes and how difficult it was for nonprofits to do so. And this was right when the internet was hopping from just corporate to nonprofit. So I quit my job and started a company called Community Technology, CTK. It's a for-profit C Corp. And what we did was we designed, built, sold, and serviced case management software, one of the first that ever existed. I had that company for 13 years. It grew to be very large. We had about 18,000 nonprofit organizations on four continents. About a quarter of a million service providers a day were using it, impacting the lives of about 23 million service recipients. I sold that and I started where I am today, Mission Box. Mission Box is a two-part company. We began by building a global online free education and training resource for nonprofit charities around the world. And then we...
It really is, by the way. I was perusing through it again before you came here. Missionbox.com, for people that are listening along, there are just tremendous resources there for nonprofits. I want to acknowledge that for the people listening along. It's really a wonderful site that you've built specifically on that. Yeah, no question about it.
We built, or we hired 18 different writers around the world and researchers from The Guardian in London to other publications here in the United States to research and write brand new state-of-the-art articles on every single component of governing a nonprofit, as well as mission delivery.
And one of the things I'm curious, what I'm recollecting when we first met, and you were explaining to me, you know, the vision of that years ago, it was really that I think part of what you had seen is how much organizations work in silos, how there are so many different nonprofits that have, you know, different missions that they're working on, but a lot of times the blocking and tackling, kind of the inside stuff, is similar, yet they're so busy and focused on their work that sometimes they're not always able to kind of learn from one another and share different best practices. So I don't know if that statement back to you kind of resonates.
You have a good memory. That's exactly right.
All right. Because my bonus points.
Definitely bonus points for you, Stephen. When I worked at CTK, because I got a chance to travel all over the world and meet all those nonprofit customers, what I kept seeing was that somebody was doing, let's say an organization was doing really great work with folks who were homeless in Glasgow, but no one knew about it here in the United States. And so they were getting incredible outcomes with a very unique model, but the model was not being shared. So part of the goal of Mission Box was to share that information. The other goal was to make sure that nonprofits had access to the most updated information on all components of best practice governance. If you, for instance, type in fundraising in Google, just any search engine, I think you get something like 1,100,000 returns to that query. And it's everything from kids' school papers to articles that are 15, 20 years old to most recent. And most nonprofits, 80%, are under $2 million a year annual budget. They don't have researchers. They don't have a way to kind of call out what is the valuable info here. So we did that for them and rewrote the articles, re-researched, used the latest and greatest resources. So that's Mission Box. I love Mission Box. Part of Mission Box, besides free education and training, is that we provide grants. We're a pretty young company, so we don't have a lot of money to grant, but we're a social enterprise, and every single month we put money out there, grants, for nonprofits to apply for. They're not big. The biggest one is probably like $10,000. The smallest can be microgrants, you know, a collection of microgrants and everything in between. But the idea is, I come from the nonprofit sector. We understand the struggles, and we want to help in every small way we can, every big and every small way. Recently, our business took on another component, and we launched a software platform for community engagement, and it's called Engagement Communities. And what it's about is simple. It's providing a tool set for nonprofits to use to more deeply engage their stakeholders.
And I watched, you know, the other week we had, or maybe even was it, excuse me, this week, mm-hmm. we had lunch together, and you were giving me kind of the full update on that. And I watched, you know, a video that you had prepared about it. And that's something that I constantly hear across the board from the nonprofits that we work with, is that, you know, they have trouble keeping track of everything. They have trouble communicating with all sorts of different stakeholders, whether it's employees, board members, volunteers, and many other constituent groups that I'm sure you'll go into.
Donors.
All of that. Staff. And I think what really struck me, you know, even one of the things was, I constantly see the statistic and you'll correct me if I'm wrong on it, but, you know, effectively the drop off of donor retention. So an organization works really hard, is able to have, you know, someone, you know, make a generous donation to support them. But next year, like, where'd they go? And it's tough doing that. I think that's something that a lot of nonprofits can relate to, that struggle. So just to kind of riff in here, but do you mind kind of talking about that use case and then the others that and how the software works?
I think a good example of that is that a recent research study looking at donor behaviors for, you know, donors, significant donors, for a small nonprofit that may be somebody that gives them $1,000 or £1,000 a year. For a larger one, it may be $100,000. But no matter how you define as a nonprofit what that major donor is, you lose 53% of those donors every year. That means if you start out with 1,000 donors, in 5 years, you have 12 of those left. And when you ask those donors, why did you only give once? Overwhelmingly, they say, we did not feel engaged. Then nonprofits say, but wait, we're constantly emailing them. We send them invitation surveys, invite them to our galas, send them newsletters as attachment, our annual report, cute pictures of the kids we serve, or touching pictures of the elder care we provide. But the truth is that those methods no longer work. They worked in 2000, 2002, 3, 4, 5. If you think about your own inbox today,
please,
you're drowning. And another study that HubSpot did found that nonprofit emails that go to constituents that know who they are, that means to your volunteers, to your board members, to your donors, to staff, to other supporters and advocates, only 34% of those emails are opened. And of that 34%, only 4% of attachments are opened. So if you're telling your story and continuing to try and engage donors, volunteers, et cetera, they're not hearing it. And so what they do then is walk away and say, I don't understand. I don't understand what happened to the money. I don't know what impact I had. I don't know about the larger goals of this organization. For a lot of people, they both donate and volunteer because they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. That's what we all want, I think, as human beings. But if they're isolated and they get email barrages and survey barrages, which, by the way, have a 12% open rate, or evites to events that they're working, they can't attend, instead of engaging them, they feel more and more isolated. They're not meeting people. They're not learning more about what impact they're making. So they move on to the next good story from another nonprofit. And you can't blame them. I am on the board of several nonprofits. And one that I love very much that I joined about a year ago, I looked. They've sent me 960 emails since last October. 960. I opened about a third of them. And I'm a good board member. I mean, I know what my job is. And many of those that I couldn't open because I was traveling, I was on a plane, I was at a conference, had attachments. And they were those annual reports and those heart-rending stories and stories of how my giving, both money and time, made a difference. And I didn't see them. So that's just with donors and volunteers. A third of all volunteers walk away every year and don't tell a nonprofit why. And you spent an average of $2,500 recruiting and training that volunteer. And they disappear.
Yeah. And I also just, as you're saying all this, completely agree with you. I'm also going to the other side of it for a second here about all of those passionate employees at the organization that are putting in the work to create all of those documents and everything. And it's, I don't want to say it's for naught, but I mean, they're tirelessly working hard and like doing the work. But if people aren't reading it or seeing it and it's not engaging people,
That's right.
What's going on?
So quickly, I'll tell you that we did a little study with a pilot, United Way, using engagement communities, and they were spending 2.5 full staff days a week chasing stakeholders and getting the kind of results I've just been talking about. So that money gets saved. If what you do is engagement communities is you create a place where they go, and it's mobile enabled. So they can do it on their phone when they're getting ready for bed. They can do it on a bus or a train. They can do it on a plane. And they don't get flooded with emails that they cannot open and surveys and invitations that they cannot respond to.
One of the things really quickly, and I'd love you to go into more of an example of how that United Way or another group uses it, the practical things so people can kind of wrap their head around it. But when you brought this part up to me and hadn't gone deeper where you're going to go in a second, I kind of said, well, what about LinkedIn? Why not have a LinkedIn group? And you brought up a couple of times now, a really great point of how that is, now I do have a bad memory. I'm blanking on your term, but it could just get lost in the shuffle.
It's asynchronous.
Asynchronous. Yeah. So tell us about that and why this is a better solution the way you've built your software.
Okay. So we built these platforms. They're private. They're what's called white labeled, which just means you can make that your own. It looks like your nonprofit. It looks like your website, but it's private. It's password accessible. And when you go in, it replaces 18 different tools that nonprofits use every day to try and connect with supporters and or clients, from shared docs to video posts to invitations, surveys, published stories, opinions, posts. And you can also alert users via text. Hey, take a look. You can give them 3 words in a text and they know to go take a look because something special's there. So one of the things that it does is it has, not only do we have analytics for you so you know who's opening what and what they're doing, they can vote if they need to, they can be completely confidential or partially so, but it has what's called synchronous conversations, which means simply it happens in real time. Where a LinkedIn post does not. I make a post and then 5 other people do, and my post drops down until it's invisible and someone has to search for it. And if they don't know I post it, they're not going to search. So it becomes difficult to have real-time conversations. We want constituents, and that includes consumers, people you're serving, to be able to ask real-time questions and get real-time answers. We want them to be able to connect with the right people. Do you know how hard it is for your stakeholders, if you're a nonprofit, to know the right person to call? So I'm a volunteer. I show up. I miss the training. There's no place I can look at the video as there is in engagement communities or, you know, read the training. So I show up and no one's prepared for me. So I sit, and this is a real story, and any nonprofit knows this. I sit around a while. This happens to me 2 or 3 times, and I'm done. I came because I'm new to town. I wanted to meet people. I care about the cause. I thought I could really do something. And instead, I'm kind of sitting in a kitchen waiting. We're going to provide you in engagement communities with the right person to say, hey, I'm not coming back unless I get these things. Or I'm an attorney and you have me doing the dishes. I'm happy to do the dishes, but do you need an attorney? You know, because I'm here. That's pro bono. And if you don't even know who to complain to, if you don't even know who it is you're supposed to ask, you're just going to wander away. And that's exactly what happens. So a place like Engagement Communities ensures that that does not occur. Also, nonprofits and for-profits who have fee-for-service clients. Sorry. Nonprofits often have a fee-for-service line of service provision, and they are essentially your customers. You don't think of them that way, but they're paying, or somebody's paying for them. A third-party payee, like an insurance company, is paying for them. You want to deeply engage them. You want them to feel like they know everything about the organization. They need to feel commitment. They need to feel inspiration. They need to feel connection. And if you don't do that, don't expect them to stick with you. They'll go somewhere else to get their services, just like any for-profit business, if you do not engage your customers. And really, engagement is about head and heart. That's the trick. You know, it's more than information. You want your donors, your volunteers, your staff, your clients to be informed. You want to give them education and information, resource lists, but you also want to tell them stories. You want to make what you do real. You want to make them understand that they're important and why exactly. Not just thanks, but thanks for this, and here's why. And that's what people talk about when they talk about feeling truly engaged, a level of commitment, a level of inspiration that you can do that if you have the time to meet everyone one-on-one. And do you? I don't.
I don't even, I mean, as you say all of this, I'm just sitting back here. It's really unbelievable because I see the challenges just as we're growing at Charity Charge. And you want to have that one-on-one connection, which is just absolutely incredible. But on the flip side of it, if you're going to have real impact and scale, whether, you know, you're a national organization or local in your community, I mean, even once you start getting beyond, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 people, and then you think about it, it's interesting all the touch points that you have, because you've got employees that need to be engaged, board members that need to be engaged, the quote, clients that you're servicing, the volunteers,
the donors,
everything. I mean, there are so many, obviously
maybe
there's some
families,
overlap between it. Yeah. And I think candidly, that's where we've, dropped the ball here, or just have opportunity to move forward, is just like, how do we continue to broadcast more of like what we're doing to our, our community and just all the different kind of stakeholders that we have.
So the good news is it's never too late.
Yeah.
You know,
good. Okay.
That's the good news for profits and nonprofits. It's never too late to stop and say, wait a minute, I'm sorry. I don't think we've engaged you enough. We're going to provide you this very cool place to go. And once you, sign in the first time, if you give permission, then it holds your password. You never have to sign in again. And you're going to see just what you want to see. And what you need to see. If I'm a board member, I'm going to get the business side, the budgets I have to approve, and the planning that I need to do. But I'm also going to get to really read an in-depth article about our newest board member. I'm going to get to ask questions. I'm going to get to have a synchronous real-time conversation with that person and say, welcome, you know, and you want to go have coffee or a drink, you know, start to connect. Engagement community is not meant to replace human beings. It's meant as an adjunct, because all of us only have so much bandwidth. So if I had, like in my last company, 18,000 customers, and I traveled continually, I'm not going to touch in a deep way every single one of those people, as hard as I tried, and I did. But I can create a place where they can go and get some, at least, of that connection, and then I can supply the rest. That's really the idea. And so we have three different versions. We have a stakeholder, what we call it, version, which are those people that make your business run, your volunteers, your donors, your board members, your staff. And let's not forget staff, because nonprofit turnover is twice that of for-profit. And it's not the money. Every study, it is not the money. It's not the salary. It's not the benefits. It's a sense that they understand the bigger picture of what's going on in their organization. They understand where it's going, and they get regular feedback from their peers. They get regular performance evaluations. They know who to go to if they have a problem, et cetera. You can do that with an engagement community and still have the face-to-face time with them when you don't have to worry about those things getting taken care of. Then we have a second type of engagement community that's for collaborations. So we have a customer, the Semer Institute. Semer Institute funds 121 United Ways around the country, and they provide funding so that those United Ways can support agencies that deal specifically with trying to interrupt intergenerational cycles of poverty that go on and on. they use our tool so that all those United Ways who get that funding and disperse it to those organizations, and then all those service provider organizations have one place to go to efficiently talk, plan, project manage, learn what CEMER would like them to do next, have access to the forms they need to fill out the reports, post their reports, etc. That, you know, CEMER Institute is very generous, but they have a very small staff. They can't possibly do that face-to-face. But this way, they can make their calls and make their visits, but 24/7, this is out there for those partners, and it's critical. We also have what we call Life Driver, which is all about looking at your clients and or your patients as one of your constituents that need to be involved. They need to be involved in understanding who you are. They need to be involved in their own care planning. They need to be involved in being able to find their own resources, get education about whatever issue they're presenting that got them to your nonprofit in the first place. We have a group in the Midwest, Colors Plus, that are using it as an adjunct to their drop-in center for teens that are LGBTQ. And these are kids who need to be in a safe and private environment because they're at risk. They're at risk of bullying and even worse. They also need resources. They need articles. Suicide risk is really high for this group. You know, what is being suicidal mean and how to get resources? They can also invite into this their group those that they trust. And our company is GDPR compliant. And that just simply means that we follow the European standard. We never touch, mine, share, sell, go near anyone's private data, because we want everyone who uses these systems to feel safe.
You know, it's always interesting, like, what's sometimes the question behind the question, what are people thinking? Mm-hmm. You answer that, because I was sitting here thinking, what are the best practices and kind of like code of conduct, whatever you want to call it, that you're adhering to, because it's a lot of sensitive data. I'm really glad you mentioned that. I think people listening are wondering that.
So. Sure. And also, we have our privacy and our ethics policies published on Mission Box site. If you go right to the bottom, we spent a year with experts developing that. And I think that's important, because you use Facebook work group, or you can use Twitter work groups. But the truth is, even though they may be private to some degree, the data is being mined.
I think that is sold. The most, even when I was, I mean, you know, obviously we talked about LinkedIn earlier on, and you said the, you know, asynchronous aspect of it. To me, it's the data and the privacy is such awesome.
And that's a good point.
It's terrific, Steven. You know, what you guys are using. And I'm just kind of giving it back to you, even as we're, you know, going to, it's just really helpful to kind of have that perspective and everything. Now, I want to ask you, as we're getting just to the top of this interview, which
sure,
this was just really unbelievable. Just, I think you're perspectival on everything, because you've seen it on both sides, mm-hmm. And for so long, and you have, you know, and I think also the integration of technology with nonprofits too. I mean, things have changed over the past couple of decades in a really sincere way. Now, we had talked about before, I mean, I think all the wonderful resources are missionbox.com. Where else can they find you? What other?
Well, if you go to missionbox.com under mm-hmm. software,
got it.
And you're that's going where... to find out about engagement communities. You can ask for a video. You can ask for a demo. You can just ask more questions. And we've got those engagement communities broken up in the way described, the three major types. You can also look and see along the top nav menu, you can open and look at our visionary articles, where we actually interviewed visionaries in the nonprofit community, of which, Stephen, you are one. I did that interview and you are published on that site, because we want people to know about the latest and greatest and what leaders are achieving, either so that they can be part of that, or maybe they can replicate that model where they are.
Thank you so much for the plug on that, actually, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I wasn't going to say it myself, but you all did highlight me as a visionary, and I really appreciated that. Catherine, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It really is a pleasure to have you here.
It was really a pleasure to visit with you. Thanks so much.